Chapter 20 Baubles. Athrogate stood by the stem of the new host tower of the Arcane, hands on hips and a continual sigh blowing from his mouth. Ambergris was there with him, moving about the recently constructed trunk of the planned tower, examining the joints between the fitted pieces, casting a spell here or there, but ultimately shaking her head.
"It ain't working,"
Athrogate explained to Catti Bree, when she and the other magic-using architects of the project arrived to his summons. A swarm of dwarves was gathering as well.
"The progress seems remarkable," Lord Paris Ulfbinder replied, nodding as he worked, his eyes up the 10-foot-tall trunk of the structure.
"Better than I would have ever imagined,"
Athrogate snorted derisively. "Can you not find enough pieces?" Il-Nazara put in, and she looked from Athrogate to Lady Avalier, who was leading the search for shards from the original host tower.
"We'll never find them all," Lady Avalier replied. "But surely a substantial portion will be recovered."
"Won't matter,"
Athrogate told them.
"Ain't working."
He moved over to the structure in ambergris and motioned for Skullbreaker, her two-handed mace. He spit into his hands, hoisted the weapon, and to the shock of all watching, slammed it against the side of the tower. The stone disintegrated beneath the weight of the blow, and large cracks ran out from the spot of impact.
"Wouldn't hold a twig for long! Ne'er mind a branch big enough to hold rooms and such," the dwarf explained.
"If we thicken the walls, we might be going up higher," Ambergris agreed. "But we'll not e'er replicate them tree branches that made for the first tower."
"We'll need to find different spells to strengthen the bends and joints," Catti Bree suggested.
"Or better builders," Gromp remarked.
"No designs to support a one-armed arch, ye derned elf,"
Athrogate argued, and others, wizard and dwarf alike, took up the debate.
"Or our puzzle approach is errant," one giant voice yelled above them, drawing the attention of all. "This was my fear," the cloud giant Cecilia went on. "We have approached the reconstruction as a matter of collecting the old pieces and then weaving dwarven masonry and magical spells to put the puzzle back together. I was doubtful from the start."
"Ye got a better idea?"
Athrogate asked skeptically, hands on hips and a scowl on his face.
"We got no design prints."
"We're not even for knowing what them pieces are made of," Ambergris added. "Seem to be crystal mostly, aye, but there's more."
"The lack of a design rendering is damaging," Cecilia admitted.
"Because it was constructed wholly of magic," Gromp argued.
"Puzzling as well," said Lord Paris. "Surely they worked with a plan."
"Surely they did not," argued Gromp. "The host tower was a magical artwork, not a dwarven construct."
"We're knowing that dwarves were a part of it,"
Athrogate protested.
"So were mules, likely," Gromp retorted.
"Bah, as ye wish," said Athrogate. "And ye're knowing the spells that might paint her anew, are ye?"
Gromp scowled at the sarcasm.
"We've no hint of any such thing," Tasmakella put in. "Whatever magic that might have built the host tower is not revealed among the ancient knowledge of dragonkind."
"Or you simply haven't found it yet," Lord Paris replied, and both Tasmakella and Il-Nazara looked at each other and shrugged.
"Then might we all go back to our libraries or repositories, our most learned scholars, and delve deeper into the magic,"
Cecilia said, and others nodded. Gromp stared hard at the two dwarves standing by the trunk, as if judging them for this failure. Many whispered conversations erupted all around the field on Cutlass Island, not in disagreement with Cecilia's last advice, but neither in support. They reflected the pall that Athrogate's undeniable observations had so abruptly thrown over the progress they had been making these 10 days. Indeed, the whole field around the structure became a cacophony of groans and muttering. Gromp Banry wasn't listening, though, nor was he including his own voice in the arguments. He noted that Catti Bree, too, had tuned all of it out. She walked slowly to the pile of shards that lay to the side of the tower, picked up a small one in one hand, then conjured a ball of flame in her other hand. She examined the shard, then put it, her hand, and that curious ruby ring she wore into the summoned flame.
then, to Gromp's surprise, stuck her face into the flame as well. And there she remained, and many began to take note, and so the murmurs quieted until the only sound on the field was the hissing burn of Catty Bree's summoned flame, a hiss that grew louder as the flames intensified, shifting to a more furious orange, then to a bluish white, and finally just a pure white. Those nearest the woman had to step back from the intense radiation of heat, but Catty Bree kept her hand and face in the fire. With his shield arm swinging out wide to the left, Tiago could feel the two scimitars trapped, and no more in the grasp of Driz Doerden. That arm led the turn, the rising twist lifting up from his feet, his legs, his hips, his chest, his entire spine rotating in a beautiful and deadly dance. The proud young Bayenri roared in anticipation of his ultimate victory as his head came around, leading the way for his swinging sword arm. And that roar became something very different when Tiago saw his target clearly, standing exactly where he had expected, easily in range, but hardly unarmed. The astonished Tiago stared at the sharp end of an arrow, and Drizzt held a bow. From where it had come, Tiago could not begin to guess in that flash of recognition, that singular, terrifying instant before Talmaril was released, and a bright flash of burning whiteness consumed the Bayenri warrior's thoughts. Tiago Bayenri's head simply exploded.
"Baubles," Drizzt said dryly, and flashed his left arm across to use the bow to block the swinging sword, though Vidranath came across with no strength behind the swing. "Fairly earned, and wisely mastered."
Catty Bree was laughing and shaking her head at the simplicity of it all when she pulled her face out of the white-hot flame. With a puff of breath and a word, she blew out the flame, extinguishing her spell.
"What do ye know, girl?"
Athrogate asked. "Limestone," she said, holding up the shard.
"Too hard," Athrogate replied. "Marble, then, but I too brittle."
"Crystalline,"
Ambergris added.
"What do you know?" Gromf demanded.
"No wizard built this tower," she said to the great drow. "And no priest, and no dwarf, and no dragon, and no giant," she added, looking in turn at Ambergris, Athrogate, the dragon sisters, and Cecilia. "Though all helped, do not doubt."
"Now you speak in riddles," an agitated Gromp remarked.
"Though all helped, and all were surely needed," Catty Bree said, "to contain the magic."
"Say it plainly, woman," an obviously intrigued Lord Paris begged. The scholar Shadowvar leaned forward, pulled toward Catty Bree.
"The host tower of the Arcane was built by the primordial beast that resides in Gontalgrim," she answered with all confidence. She had seen. In the intense heat, the shard had revealed itself, and through the intense fire, and through her ring of elemental command, Catty Bree had peered into the realm of fire once more, and it heard the echo of the primordial's memory. 100 confused, mostly disapproving scowls came back at her. "The roots were first, bit by bit. The tree grown later," the woman explained, to even more confused stares.
"Grown?"
Lord Paris and Cecilia asked in unison, and Catty Bree nodded.
"As if 'twere alive?"
Ambergris asked, and Catty Bree nodded.
"Then we cannot rebuild it, and Gontalgrim's doomed,"
Athrogate said logically.
"Yes, we can,"
said the smiling Catty Bree, looking right at Gromf.
"Yes, we can."
By the time Tiago's sword hit the floor, Drizzt already had his second arrow away, this one shooting up at the trio on the balcony. The woman in the middle of the group smiled even as the enchanted missile sped for her face. Her wards caused it to explode into a shower of harmless, multicolored sparks long before it got near enough to hit her. So Drizzt would send a steady stream, he decided, but before he had the next arrow on the bowstring, he was in utter blackness. Instinctively, and quite used to such an occurrence, he dived into a roll. So experienced was he with the drow darkness that he knew precisely how many rolls he would need to get out the side of it, figuring it had been centered on him. And so he came around to his knees ready to shoot, but was still in total darkness. He fired anyway, knowing the general direction, but only one shot. He had to be moving quickly. And so he was rolling again, over and over, and each one seemed slower to him, and he couldn't understand that. The floor felt less solid. It was as if he rolled in bubbling tar, as though he were sinking into it. It caught him and held him and tried to flow up over him. It was just darkness then, and Drizzt wasn't even rolling, just flopping slightly, his shoulder coming off the floor but sagging back down, broken and caught.